At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Dispensing cannabis business knowledge beyond a million square feet of cultivation space, CannabisRadio.com proudly presents Blunt Business, harvested by Strainwise Consulting. Together, we will navigate the challenges and opportunities of one of the most profitable industries on earth. Join us each episode to hear our weekly roundtables and interviews with industry professionals. Now, let's delve into some Blunt Business with your host, Sean Eubanks.
Thanks for joining us and welcome to Blunt Business. I'm your host, Sean Eubanks, Vice President of Business Development with Strainwise Consulting. And on our show today, we have Charlie Cangelosi, who is the Director of Sales of Kiva Confections. Kiva Sales and Service operates with the highest level of professionalism and integrity, providing industry-leading sales and logistics services. Some of the partner and brands include Kiva Confections, Humboldt Apothecary, Holistic Hounds, Keith Cola, Native Prison Farms, and Pure Ratios. As a consumer packaged goods industry professional, Charlie developed his leadership, sales, marketing, and analytics skills working for such beverage companies as Anheuser-Busch, MillerCoors, and Ninkasi Brewing Company. Charlie's background and skills include distributor sales and marketing management, national account management and revenue and planning leadership, as well as business development. He balances his expertise with common sense approach to identify and take advantage of business opportunities. Charlie's also a grad of California State University, Long Beach, and holds an MBA from Pepperdine University. Welcome to the show, Charlie.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much for having for being on the show here. Sorry for butchering the names of Humboldt Apothecary.
Humboldt Apothecary.
Yes, but I know I'm hoping that Kiva Confections is such a massive brand. I'm pretty sure everyone in the industry has heard of it. So it's great to have you on the show. You were actually you're a board member of California Cannabis Manufacturing Association, and you were involved also in a subcommittee with CCIA. Tell me a little bit about the CCMA, what it's about, and what we should know about it.
Yeah, so CCMA is a small group of cannabis manufacturers who have been operating in the state of California for quite a while. And about 18 months ago, we saw that there was an opportunity in the legislative sphere to create a voice for the companies that were really out there innovating as manufacturers, right? There was already CCIA that was doing an amazing job of, you know, providing the legislative initiatives for the industry as a whole. There was the California Growers Association that was there advocating for the cultivators and farmers out there across the state. But there's no one really advocating for the needs and desires, so to speak, for the manufacturers. And obviously, as this industry has evolved, you know, more and more folks are out there innovating around that manufacturing space. So, you know, we got together with a small group of other manufacturers and hired our own lobbyists to start it, to go out and make sure that our voice was being heard and that we could help educate the legislators in Sacramento and across a lot of local cities to really understand and educate them what a cannabis manufacturer was all about, right? Because they were very familiar with the farmers and they had a very good idea of what the total industry looked like, but they didn't have really good insight into the complexities and challenges of a manufacturer. And you take us as an example, as a confections company, they really didn't understand how we took our products, you know, which are primarily chocolate bars, and then infused them and turned them into this sort of industry-leading cannabis confection that really helped a lot of people out. So, you know, it's been a great experience. We've done a lot of tours, had a lot of meetings, and you know, it's really given the legislators and regulators a much better understanding on how to move forward with what they're trying to get accomplished and partnering with manufacturers in the state.
I'm really proud to see that California stepped up and limited the amount of THC, the amount of milligrams, the dosage requirements. Did CCMA have anything to do with that part of it?
Yeah, we provided them with a lot of feedback on what the dosing limits should be, you know, what ranges they should be in, and exactly what a recommended dose should be. The 100 milligram cap that they put in, you know, I think that's a good starting point. It was actually one of the challenges for our company and a lot of other companies because people were above that dosing limit. You know, our top dose product was 180 milligrams, you know, but there's a lot of people that had very high ratio products in the marketplace. So, you know, we all had to scramble a little bit to reformulate. And I think the 100 milligram point is a good place to start. But that's one of our initiatives this year, is to continue providing feedback to them from the legislative standpoint to, you know, maybe create a little bit more room in that dosing limit, but also making sure that we're providing clear guidance to the user on how to properly dose. And that's always going to be the key point in all of this, is educating people how to utilize the products properly.
Well, I applaud your activity there. I think it's so important. It's so easy, I think, to just focus on your business and try to turn your profit. You guys are an incredible company, have a wonderful presence. And when federal legalization is allowed, I'm sure you'll cross the states and be in every single state. But I really like the fact that you're taking a step back and you're focused on moving the industry forward. That's really incredible. So thank you for doing that. Is there anything else that you're working on right now besides the DOSHA's requirements? Anything pressing that people should pay attention to CCMA or possibly donate and help your cause?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, we're always looking for more feedback from other manufacturers in the industry and across the state of California that can provide their perspectives and give us more information. So if you find our website, there's a spot on there to join the organization. We have some key initiatives that we're going to be working on again this year with the legislators and the regulators, primarily around, as I mentioned, you know, dialing in on that dosing limit. One of the big initiatives for us too is to really work with them on what the proper way to create a safety packaging, so child resistant packaging that is effective and practical. The current regulations, you know, are requiring everybody to make individual packages that are child resistant, and quite frankly, all we're really doing is creating a bunch of landfill waste. Because just think about any time you ever get something in a blister pack, so to speak. We're not doing that, but as an example, you end up cutting it open and that just gets pitched to the side. We'd rather see the industry move around an exit bag strategy, where when a consumer makes a purchase at the point of at retail, mm-hmm. They leave with a child-resistant package that is reusable. So now you have a larger container that you can put multiple products in, and you can safeguard your products in your home in perpetuity, right? Because it's a reusable package. And I think that's one of those key safety things that the industry needs to work with legislators on and regulators, so that we not only are providing safety at the moment of purchase, but also downstream. And, you know, that's a key thing that we're going to continue to work with them on.
Well, again, I want to applaud you for that. I mean, it's a wonderful angle on the green side of things. Obviously, there's a tremendous amount of waste, but and everybody, first and foremost, wants to be compliant, wants to do what regulators say do. But I think, Charlie, you would agree. I mean, there's a lot of packaging that is adult-proof at this point. It's well beyond child-proof. But, you know, however we can get there to where it ultimately serves what the consumer's looking for and absolutely does what the federal government wants to do, and all governments and all adults want to do is keep this out of the hands of kids and strike a balance there. So I applaud you guys for your efforts there.
Thank you.
All right. So you were also on the CCIA subcommittee. Which committee were you on?
I was on the distribution subcommittee with CCIA.
Wonderful. And how is there anything that happened during on the distribution? Are you happy with how all that shaked out? I know it's probably a loaded question, but are you satisfied with the process?
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things that spurred the creation of the Manufacturing Association, because at one point in the history of the California move to regulation, there was a piece of legislation that was going to mandate a third party distributor within the industry. And really, one of the things that makes California so unique as a global leader is its ability to innovate. And one of the key points to innovation is being able to touch your customer. So with CCIA and CCMA, we really strongly advocated to allow manufacturers and cultivators to be able to take their products to market and touch the retailer and ultimately touch the end user, right? So if you look at two of the largest adult use industries in the state of California, they both have that right. So I'm talking about the wineries and I'm talking about craft brewing. So, you know, Napa Valley and the California wine industry is a $50 billion plus a year industry. It brings 23 million tourists into the state. And it's because the wineries are allowed to touch and speak with their end users, right? It's created all that tourism. The guys and gals in the craft beering industry have that same right. So if Stone Brewing wasn't able to be their own distributor, they wouldn't have had the ability to create a $100 million investment fund to help other innovative craft brewers get started. If Ballast Point hadn't have had that right, they wouldn't have sold the business for $1 billion. So when we started telling those stories and using those examples with the legislators, you know, it was an aha moment, but it was familiar to them. And they understood that the culture that is around cannabis and has been born in the state of California, that continues forward only with the ability to allow the people that are doing the innovation to reach the retailer and reach the end consumer. So that was one of the major initiatives that we got done last year, was to be able to maintain that ability to self-distribute. That doesn't mean that someone can't come in and create their own distribution company. There's some really good operators out there that are doing that. But it was definitely one of the things that we were very focused on and we felt very passionate about, because it was at the core of what the industry and the cannabis culture in California is all about. So, you know, we were excited to see that was able to work out for the best of the industry and ultimately the end consumer.
Great. Well, I want to thank you so much for serving on those boards. I think with your background, you were probably a tremendous asset for those guys. I know you can't do everything. So I know you stepped away from that subcommittee, but I'm sure you were a tremendous asset to them. We do need to take a quick break, Charlie. We'll be right back with Charlie Cangelosi. He's the director of sales for Kiva Confections. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Introducing 420 Cloud, ignited by MSIG, one of the fastest growing social apps around. The only app you'll need for all things cannabis. Find the latest cannabis news, videos, and stories, ranging from business and tech to sports and medicine. Start your career in cannabis by seeking, identifying, and applying for jobs through our expansive listings. For businesses, 420cloud.com features a full-scale cross-channel network, monetizing high traffic for big data conversion and analytics. Download 420 Cloud now from the iTunes Store or Google Play. MSIG.com is a publicly listed company on the OTC, symbol MCIG.
At Alternative Vibes, our core values of quality, loyalty, respect, and honesty guides us in our mission to help families find peace and harmony through our products and services. Whether you are looking for a more natural way of living, shopping for essential oils, topicals, and edibles, or searching for a path towards achieving your goals, we are your choice. Learn more about our complete line of natural products and solutions at AlternativeVibes.com. Bringing quality of living to life. AlternativeVibes.com.
Cannabis concentrates have been around for hundreds of centuries. In 19th century America, extracts mixed with other herbs were sold as a miracle cure. Now, Apex Supercritical has elevated the science of extraction into the 21st century. Apex Supercritical is the leader in CO2 extraction, which is the cleanest, safest, and purest way to extract plant oils. ROI in as little as 3 weeks. Our cost-effective systems are fully automated with an industry-leading 3-year warranty. And if we don't have your system in stock, we can build one in as little as 4 weeks, bringing CO2 extraction to the masses. Learn more at apeksupercritical.com. 4-week build excludes high production systems.
The Stoner Jesus Show. Look for his live video show on Facebook Live at facebook.com/stonerjesus420 or catch the show on demand only on cannabisradio.com.
I hope you didn't forget about us, because we're back with Blunt Business on Cannabis Radio.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm your host, Sean Eubanks, Vice President of Business Development for Strainwise Consulting. And on our show today, we have been talking to Charlie Cangelosi of Kiva Confections. Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, so great first segment there. A lot of good topics. We're going to transition here into California's regulated market. Just came online in January. So how have things been going?
Oh, well, that's a little bit of a loaded question. So it really does depend on where you live and in which part of the industry or what type of consumer you are. So, you know, the areas where the local cities were ready to go on January 1st, those areas are doing unbelievable. You know, recently I was down in Orange County, and Santa Ana was ready to go with adult access on January 1st. And I was talking to one of our retailers down there, and they were telling me that their ratio now is up to 15-1 of adult use consumers to medical patients. And that sort of is in line with where we were prior. You know, there's approximately 1 million medical patients in the state of California, but there's also approximately, you know, 29 million people that live in the state that are 21 or older. So I was sitting in their lobby waiting for this meeting to start, and it was an amazing cross section of people. Middle of the day, again, in Orange County, tons of, you know, professionals in there shopping, midday, just going about their, you know, business. At lunchtime, you know, there's some medical patients in there, people that are very dependent on the products to, you know, help their medical conditions. And it was really, really encouraging to sit there and really watch that. And we've seen that in other areas like West Hollywood, where there's still lines at locations, and also up in Northern California, San Jose, Santa Cruz, San Francisco, Berkeley, and Sacramento, right, where the adult access is wide open. The other end of that spectrum, however, is that there's a lot of people that, you know, are having their access as medical patients to getting products be cut off because the local municipalities haven't instituted a local permit or program yet. So these operators who were either had storefronts or delivery services operating under the old collective model, they can't get a license. And the issue with that is, we're now licensed as a manufacturer and a distributor, and we cannot do business with anybody who's not licensed. So in these areas that don't have a local license in place, we can't do business with those people. And so, it's creating a little bit of turbulence in the market. Things are starting to improve day by day, but it's going to be a little bit of a slow evolution for the first half or this full year until everybody kind of gets into the program and settles in. One of the challenges around this was the way the new law was written is local authority is required to get your state license. The local governments were waiting on the state to release their regulations before they implemented their programs. So we had a little bit of a Mexican standoff going at the end of last year. But now that the state has released the regulations, emergency regs, the local municipalities can now start to craft their local licensing, and we can all start to move forward and allow access for everybody out there in the state.
Well, and as involved as Kiva Confections is in the market and all levels in helping move legislation and everything you've done, are you now, when you come across a great product that's not licensed, are you sending them to a licensed agent, or are you guys dipping your toe into writing applications? How are you helping solve that problem, or are you involved in that at all?
We do a lot of advocating and directing folks who come to us looking for that guidance. Obviously, we try not to get too lost in the weeds of really helping people go out and execute on that, but we try and point them in the right direction. And the state's done a nice job of creating a lot of information on the BCC, which is Bureau of Cannabis Control's website. But it's really coaching and educating these folks to go and really talk to their local cities and their local city officials, because just to give you a little bit of perspective, there's 500 plus cities in the state of California. And at the end of last year, there's only about 50 that had a local permit to allow people to operate at any level of the industry. So that's a lot of people that, and a lot of areas that are currently, void of any sort of local operating permits.
Yeah, we've experienced that as well. We've got 20 locations coming available in the state of California from top to bottom, and we've run into we've got an investor that's investing in a dispensary, and it hadn't quite sunk in yet that even though they're a cultivator, they must be licensed. And this is new for us because we grew up in Colorado, and everything mm-hmm. is compliance driven first. Yeah. We honor the fact of our experience. And as you know, in California, it's a different world. And it's a little bit of, a problem to try to bring people along. But Charlie, we'd love to partner with you guys. If you have an overflow, we've written more than 200 applications. So if you have an overflow and you want to do business with someone, send them to a consulting company like ours or someone else that can expedite it as quickly. Because the point is that, they realize that they're sitting there going, oh my gosh, we cannot do business. And they don't, and even though they're hearing that, in their defense, they've heard that before. It's really just actually happening now to where they cannot do business. More importantly, you can't purchase from them because there's not a license. Then they go back to square one, and then they need to get open. They need to get that application written, get it filed quickly and economically, not in an expensive way. Some of these consulting companies are charging $250,000. We're not even 1% of that. So right. It's just so low to do it. But it would be great for you to partner with someone to refer that business so that they can see the end use, which is you possibly carrying their product or doing business with them in some way.
Yeah, no, I really think that there needs to be folks like you out there that are helping people, but doing it in a thoughtful and reasonable way, because we've already experienced a few of those folks that are making really big promises for a really big price tag. And we know enough to know that they probably really can't deliver on some of those promises.
Well, not only that, but the idea is you got to ask them what's the point of that? You know, for us, we write the application. They need a license, but we don't make our money that way. We want to help them with on the legal side of things, on the compliance side of things. And as you know, you have to kind of get in this business and figure out what you don't know and then what your needs are, because every client's different. But I think where we stand apart is as an operator, we want to help them with operations down the road and versus, hey, are you just writing this application for me? Is that how you make your money? So right. There are a lot of ways, you know, how are you truly going to help their business? And the answer would be, we're going to connect you back with Kiva again so that you can sell your products.
Yeah, no, that's the nice thing about the California industry is we all kind of collaborate together because we know that, you know, we spent 21 years operating, in a market that was void of regulations, and we self-regulated. And now that we're in a regulated market, doesn't mean that we're all going to run away from each other. We're all here to, you know, try and help and, you know, continue to build this amazing industry that we have in front of us.
Absolutely. So how do you think, Charlie, from just a 30,000 foot view, I mean, how do you think that market will evolve and how fast? And the reason why I ask that question is because we're getting data in Colorado that's saying, you know, we're $1.3 billion revenue. And now only $300 million of that is medical. So, and we saw last year the first decline in medical sales down about $10 million, significant. And so you're starting to see a mature market like Colorado. I mean, do you think that the California market's going to evolve into just a strictly recreational market, or how do you see it evolving?
Yeah, I think the future for California is truly going to be one market, and it's just going to be adult use. And it's not going to be for the same reasons that you have seen in Colorado. The primary reason is that there is essentially no difference between M and A in the regulations. The only two differences in the two sets of regulations is the medical side of the regulations allow for a much higher dosing for capsules. Right. And that's about it. So if you wanted to go up to 2000 milligrams on a capsule, you could. But as far as every other product type within the category, there is no difference. And then the only other small nuance is if you are a medical patient in the state and you have the state issued medical card, then you are exempt from the sales tax. You're still required to pay the excise tax, and you're still going to be absorbing and paying for all the upstream cultivation taxes. But the cost of that state card would mean that you need to be spending something like over $1,500 is what I was told to make you break even, right? So there's no difference between M and A. So I think what's really going to happen is as the local municipalities create more retail permits for adult use, is people are just going to apply for that adult use license and service the industry. You know, I think that's just one of the nuances of the way the regulations were written. And I think that's why the market will evolve to a full adult use market.
Great. We do need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Charlie Cangelosi of Kiva Confections. Don't go away, guys. We'll be right back.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Introducing Blue Moon CBD, straight from the bluegrass of Kentucky. With our special nano emulsion process, you'll not only get the best CBD available, you'll get more of it. Not all CBD is the same. It's your body. It's your choice. Get relief from inflammation, anxiety, and stress. Go to www.bluemoonhemp.com and use code HEMP420 for a 20% discount on your order. Balance your body. Balance your life. Make it Blue Moon CBD.
The smoke is rising, and the next crop of podcasts devoted to cannabis providers and enthusiasts are ready to be harvested. Welcome to the Cannabis Radio Network, founded by respected rainmakers who have been producing award-winning podcasts for over a decade.
industry headlines, business updates, medical reports, marketing, and e-commerce education rolled up perfectly for your consumption.
Let's grow together. The Cannabis Radio Network. CannabisRadio.com.
Ignite the conversation on some trending topics along the Cannabis Radio social media network. Join our crew of thousands on our Cannabis Radio page on Facebook or at Canna Radio, C-A-N-N-A Radio on Twitter. Plus, look for our Facebook and Google Plus pages for all of our original programs and connect with Dr. Dina, Kyle Cushman, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Nurse Heather, Doc Rob, the hosts of Gondrepreneur, and more. Connect with the growing Cannabis Radio social crusade at Canna Radio on Twitter or search for Cannabis Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and Instagram and grow with us.
Chronicling the latest cannabis industry news and headlines, Dave Inman welcomes you to the State of Cannabis. Tuesdays on demand, only on CannabisRadio.com.
I hope you didn't forget about us, because we're back with Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm your host, Sean Eubanks, Vice President of Business Development for Strainwise Consulting. And on our show today, we have been talking to Charlie Cangelosi of Kiva Confections. Charlie, welcome back.
Well, it's great to be here.
Yeah, so we have covered a lot so far. So we talked about how you thought the California market might evolve. How will Kiva Confections evolve in the California market?
Oh, we're going to continue to grow. We're looking to innovate within our own portfolio, bringing out some new products that we're pretty excited about that I can't talk about at this time. But we're also working really hard to, you know, continue to build our portfolio of partners within our distribution company, Kiva Sales and Service, and looking for those like-minded cannabinators, as I like to call them, who have done a great job of coming up with unique products and working with them to collaborate to help build their brands and take them to market.
And under Kiva Confections, what's your favorite product?
I'm a big fan of our Petramints, which are an amazing microdose product because they're only 2.5 milligrams of THC. I'm also a big fan of our Terra Espresso Bites, which is, you know, a dark chocolate covered espresso bean, which is only 5 milligrams. Those are my two favorite.
Yeah, those are delicious. Those are really good. Is there anything on the CBD side of things? We have some pucks here in Colorado that I love. They're 20-1, 2.5 milligrams. Is there anything like that Kiva Confections carries?
Yeah, so within the Kiva Confections line, we do have 100 milligram CBD espresso bar. So it's a similar flavoring to the Espresso Terabyte, and that's a 1-to-1 ratio. But within our portfolio of products, we have the Humboldt Apothecary Tinctures that has a dedicated line of CBD to THC ratio tinctures. Our Pure Ratios partners have amazing CBD patches and topicals and ratio products around there. And actually, one of our angel projects is a brand called Prism, which is a CBD pre-roll. So it was one of our former employees that had this idea, and we encouraged her and helped her go out and start the company. And so what she's doing is creating pre-rolls that have a little higher ratio of CBD in them. So it's really a really nice way, especially for people returning to cannabis, to get re-engaged with the flower, because it's not a high THC product. And it's something that they're familiar with from their past. And so that's a great line that we're working with. And then we have some other great products in the line, like Monk's drinking botanicals that have high CBD ratios. And then we also carry a line called Holistic Hounds, which is a CBD pet treat line, which is really, really cool too.
Excellent. So on the consumption side, on the edible side, is there anything, what's your best-selling CBD product there?
It would be the Humboldt Apothecary 16-to-1 tincture. And then our CBD espresso bar also does very well.
Okay, wonderful. And then, so you guys are going to sort of evolve with that. Obviously, you're going to want to expand in multiple states. Are you only in California, or are you guys all over the place?
No. Well, it depends on how you define all over the place. So currently we are selling our products in Arizona, Nevada, and Illinois. But ready and set to launch this year, we have Hawaii, Colorado, Michigan, Florida, and Massachusetts.
Absolutely. Let me know when you come to Colorado and we'll get out and try your products. I'm happy to do a podcast and visit with listeners on some feedback on those. We're happy to kind of move that along. One thing I know is you're going to do it right, and you guys have so many brands underneath you. I wouldn't be surprised if when federal legalization happens, Kiva is top of the mind for people just in general.
Yeah, no, we think we have a great product and great approach to it. So yeah, we're excited when we get to take the products to other states and get people engaged with it. So yeah, we're looking forward to that transition at the federal level.
Okay, and so you're with your activity and your activism basically with CCMA and CCIA, kind of shifting gears for you here, Charlie. What are your key legislative initiatives for 2018?
Yeah, at the state level, we're really focused, again, like I mentioned, is working on that packaging approach. The really big though piece of it is really the taxing. And at the end of the day, what the state of California needs to do is make sure that it doesn't go down the path that Washington went down, where it creates a tax structure that allows the black market to become the low-cost provider in the market. Everybody's really focused on creating this regulated market and bringing everybody into the regulated market, but we got to make sure that we're not just layering in so many costs from a tax and packaging standpoint that we're pricing the products completely out of the reach of consumers, where it becomes easier just to go back into the black market. We also really need the state and the local governments to collaborate on how to moderate that and share in that tax revenue pool, because that's another thing that's impacting the cost of the product is the local cities are putting in these gross receipt taxes that really make it expensive to operate. So we're in Oakland for adult sales. They currently have on the books a 10% gross receipt tax. So for every $10 that we generate, we got to give Oakland a dollar. And that obviously adds to the cost of the product. So, you know, those are a couple of the two big issues. And then, as always, we're really looking to try and figure out a solution for banking.
Excellent. No, and you're right about the pricing. I think it's easier to see, you know, a quarter of an ounce of flour, the cost associated with that, $150 or more, all the taxes. It's easy to figure that out. I think you can sort of hide as a confections company because you're modifying the product and you're offering something better than just the flour. Are you noticing, are you hopeful to just drive your confection prices down with taxes being lowered and things like that? Is that sort of the end goal?
Yeah, that would ultimately be the end goal, because right now the prices that we had to change just to be able to remain viable were pretty significant. So it's causing a little bit of sticker shock for a lot of people. But again, the industry just needs to evolve and figure out a way to sort of, you know, moderate it, that revenue pool from the taxes, and, you know, sort of spread it out a little bit and make it so that everybody's not really trying to take a gigantic bite out of the apple, right? Because everybody thinks this is the big golden goose of tax revenue, but you don't collect any taxes if you don't sell anything. So yeah, that's something that everybody needs to kind of get in a room and try and figure out a way to manage around. It's complex. It's obviously written into the law. It takes a lot of 2/3 and a majority of the legislation to change the tax structure. So yeah, it's a big initiative, but you know, we got to make sure that we're continuing to talk about it.
Great. We're almost out of time, Charlie, but is there any progress specifically on the banking front? You mentioned that a second ago.
No, it's just, you know, it just continues to be a challenge in the industry. The state treasurer has been working on some solutions. And obviously it's a big challenge. We're talking a lot of dollars, you know, moving around in the state. Within the industry, So hopefully there's some solutions. And I think that one of the byproducts of Attorney General Sessions' decision on the Cole Memorandum is I think it shined a really bright light for the people in Congress that they need to protect their states' rights. So I think that is actually going to end up being a motivator for a lot of people in Congress to take action for the cannabis industry and to protect their states' rights, since it's 29 states that have programs. And so I'm actually kind of optimistic now that we might see some light at the end of the tunnel, but you really don't know in this current environment in Washington.
And is there anything besides federal legalization that you'd like to see happen, any stepping stone? I mean, you've seen a lot of U.S. attorneys in each state come out and take their stance, which has been positive. Is there anything else you'd like to see incrementally done in light of that decision to rescind the Cole memo?
No, I just like to really see everybody just keep having an open and honest dialogue about this industry and, really continue to bring it into the mainstream. Honestly, I rarely run into anybody that doesn't have a positive attitude about it. So I think the more we continue to talk about it, the more it continues to normalize it, and everybody just continues to move forward. And I think, as we do that, we'll all be in a much better place, because, this federal prohibition needs to end. It started out being ridiculous, and we're to the point where it's just time to move past it and start working on things that really matter in people's lives.
Well, Charlie, you're involved in a lot of things at different levels. If someone needs to reach out to you and get in touch, even if it's just carrying your products or taking those next steps in case their state becomes legal, how do we reach out to you?
Yeah, I have the easiest email probably in the industry. It's just Charlie, and that's with an IE, at kivaconfections.com.
Excellent, so. Charlie. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a pleasure. And we need to take a quick break. Yeah, absolutely, Charlie. It's been wonderful. Thanks for your insight, and thanks for your continued advocacy in the space in general.
Oh, no, thanks to you guys and everything that you're doing.
Absolutely. We do need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Jay Kotzker, who is a cannabis attorney, and we're going to do this segment called The High Five. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Strainwise Consulting is the most sought-after consulting company for cannabis business applications and management contracts. We consulted on the first recreational license in the world and have had an over 95% success rate on applications submitted. The industry is growing at such an exponential rate that building a powerful and lasting cannabis business is a number one priority. Here's Strainwise's Sean Eubanks.
In our first 5 years, we branded and supported 9 medical and recreational marijuana dispensaries and approximately 160,000 square feet of sophisticated and efficient product cultivation.
Strainwise Consulting has the experience and expertise to guide you through the process.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Fuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Fuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be. The Fuber way.
What do master growers, dispensary owners, extraction artists, and infusion chefs all have in common? They'll all be in Denver, Colorado at NCIA Seed the Sales Show, February 7th and 8th. Don't miss a chance to learn alongside 3,000 of the cannabis industry's best and brightest in 3 highly focused tracks about cultivation, infused products and extractions, and business strategies and innovation. Network and shop for all of your business needs across 40,000 square feet of Expo 4. Register before January 29th to save $200. NCIA Seed to Sale Show, seedtosaleshow.com.
Learning the benefits of proper nutrition, supplementation, and personal development to live a healthy and abundant life. Awaken, adjust, and aspire. High on Healthy. Mondays on demand, only on CannabisRadio.com.
I hope you didn't forget about us, because we're back. with Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Blunt Business on Cannabis Radio. I'm your host, Sean Eubanks, Vice President of Business Development, and we have Jay Kotzker for our The High Five segment. Welcome back, Jay.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we cover a lot of things each week. So much going on here. So first thing, Congress's agreement on another continuing resolution.
That's right. Everyone's aware the government went through a shutdown last week. There was a little bit of debate about whether, cannabis protection amendments were going to be in any new funding bill or any continuing resolution. We got the answer to that pretty quickly. The Rohrabacher-Blumenauer amendment continues to stay with this continuing resolution so that at least gives protections to medical marijuana businesses through February 8th. Not a lot of time, but a little time.
And so this is the seventh time this amendment's been extended. There was a little bit of a panic. I noticed that social media, otherwise, people were really starting to freak out. They were sort of looking at it as a separate issue of, oh my gosh, that amendment hasn't been extended. But of course, we had a shutdown. So a little bit of an overreaction there.
Yeah, probably. When you have these continuing resolutions, typically all of the riders and amendments that were part of the previous continuing resolution carry forward, and that's what we saw this time. Unfortunately, we didn't get to add any sort of protections for adult use or recreational businesses. We had talked last time about the Polis Amendment, which would have expanded the coverage to not only medical marijuana businesses, but recreational as well. That did not make it into this continuing resolution. We can only hope that through the lobbying efforts of through the legislature, that those types of protections are going to be part of whatever this spending bill ultimately looks like.
And so we're in a midterm year here. Do you think that they're going to rush to get this done? I know immigration was a big hot topic. Illegal immigration was. I'm not sure how this shakes out, who was blamed outside of everyone just having a low approval of Congress in general. Do you anticipate them wrapping it up or just kind of kicking it down the road and doing it that way?
Yeah, I don't see another continuing resolution past February 8th. I mean, okay. I think that not only has Congress, but the community and the general public is tired of these continuing resolutions. They want to see something more formal, something more stable. And I think that's going to be a good opportunity for, the Cannabis Caucus in Washington to really push for some stronger protections for cannabis businesses.
Great. Hopefully that happens. So big news out of Vermont.
Absolutely. Just this week, it became the ninth state in the country, along with Washington, D.C., to approve recreational use of cannabis. It's a little bit different. This is the first state to actually do it legislatively. Why that occurred is simply because there's no mechanism in the state for a citizen initiative, as we have seen in other states, to put it on the ballot. So it had to be done legislatively.
And so now nationwide, 70 million people, more than one in five Americans, live in a legal marijuana state.
Yeah, isn't that incredible? I mean, we're talking about a country of 350 million people or so, and 70 million of those people already live in a state where adult use is permitted.
And so do you anticipate more states following Vermont on the legislative side, or do you think it's going to continue to be decided at the ballot box?
I'm not entirely sure. I think you're going to see a strong push for states to at least discuss it legislatively, and maybe that prompts citizen initiatives and voter initiatives in states that have a mechanism that allows that. But I think it's promising that legislators in these states that are tackling these issues and meeting them head on.
And so in Vermont, you're allowed to possess 1 ounce of cannabis, 2 mature plants, 4 immature plants. It's funny, I think of that Cheez-It commercial with the, just not quite ready, right? And they kind of go, I'm like, immature plant could be defined in a bunch of different ways.
Sure. This industry, as long as it doesn't have a bud or a flower on it, it's immature.
It's immature. Sounds good. So that's really good. So do you anticipate, I would imagine Vermont's a state kind of like Colorado, where there's going to be a lot of people growing from home.
Well, I think what you're going to see is that's really the only way. What's interesting about Vermont is it makes no mention of a commercial retail structure. It's mm-hmm. still not allowing the cultivation, large scale cultivation and retail sale of cannabis. So what mm-hmm. you're going to see is you're going to see people growing it at their house, yes. possessing it legally, and that's really the only mechanism for adult use in the state right now. The law doesn't affect any of the 5,000 current medical card holders, so that program will remain as is. But it's just very interesting that they're going to allow adult use, but they're not going to create a regulatory framework as we see going on in Massachusetts and Colorado and California and other places like that, which could have some advantages, right? I mean, especially on the heels of the rescission of the Cole memo, you're certainly not going to draw the attention in a state where you're not establishing a commercial program, even though you're allowing adult use.
So this is fascinating. It seems to be the only true ideological move a state can make, because they're not dipping into tax revenue. They're not benefiting in any way except for saying, we know you want it as a people, and we're going to do that for you.
Right. I mean, the only thing that you could envision is seeing is that it's going to reduce arrests, reduce strain on the law enforcement system. But with no commercial model, the state's not going to reap any tax benefit from this at all.
So is Governor Phil Scott an advocate or not? He says he's going to talk about it later in the year, but he's not. It just seems odd.
It is. It's very strange. And, we're going to look into it a little bit more. Phil Scott certainly is, I think he did this with a little bit of a mixed emotion. I think he even used those words in a press conference shortly after this was passed. I think he's acquiescing to the will of the people, but he's not coming out and saying, I'm going to create a commercial cannabis market in the state. So it'll be interesting to watch this one for sure. He's asked for a couple studies to be done on, education, public highway safety, things like that. And, once all of the results of those tests and those inquiries come back later in the year, I think he'll be open to maybe expanding this program. But he certainly was very clear that, hey, I'm going to take care of it. We're going to take care of it legislatively right now. I'm going to sign it as a governor. I don't want to talk about it anymore for a while.
Right. So do you think that this is a positive for Vermont? I mean, if I'm a small grower, I mean, I'm not being regulated and I'm just hearing whatever the small grow shop tells me to put into my cannabis. I mean, there's issues there. It's not a massive grow. So, pesticides might be less, heavy metals. I mean, but I don't have a way to test for that. I mean, what would you prefer Vermont do?
Well, I think we'd like to see a little bit more of a commercial structure. Certainly, us in the industry want to see the opportunity for entrepreneurs to come into the state to establish, a retail model there. But you're right, with basically allowing only home grows, you're going to have no testing structure. So no one's going to know the potency of the product they're receiving. No one's going to know what sort of pesticides or herbicides or anything have been used on the plant, if at all. So there's a little bit of a public safety issue there, perhaps. And then we're going to get into, okay, well, if there's not a retail mechanism to purchase this, how are the people going to, possess marijuana, right? How are they going to acquire it? Not everybody is going to be growing plants in their house. So it's going to kind of get back into a very strange model where people are going to be gifting cannabis to people, and then you're going to be making donations for the gas that they spent coming over, or the packaging and handling that they had to, undertake to get you the cannabis, or you're going to buy a t-shirt for $300 and you're going to get some cannabis. So it'll be very interesting to see how those kind of loopholes and gray areas are exploited.
Yeah, it might grow. It might be slower in Vermont and just a really sort of a hands-off approach, but I think we're all looking at that. And I appreciate your insight in Vermont. We do need to conclude this episode of Blunt Business. I want to thank you all for joining us on this edition of Blunt Business on Cannabis Radio. You can download episodes of our program by going to cannabisradio.com, bluntbusinessradio.com, or subscribing to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and now iHeartRadio. We will continue with Jay Kotzer on our YouTube channel, Strainwise Consulting. I want to thank you all for joining us and have an outstanding rest of your week.
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without proper consent of CannabisRadio.com is prohibited.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day.
Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.